wait for COVID-19 to be over. This is Sanjana Needs a Friend.
Welcome back, everybody, to episode
4.
Thank you. Episode 4 of yeah. I Need a Friend. That's Sanjana Needs a Friend. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well. I'm a little tired, but
yeah,
such is life on the Lenten journey and with three little kids in the house.
Mm. Yes, that is crazy. A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting out much? Walking the beat?
I'm walking the beat. I am. Yeah. I'm checking out the neighborhood. I'm exploring streets I've never explored before just because I got to get out of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
Getting to know your neighbors.
Yeah.
What's going on with your neighbors, Dave?
Oh, yeah. So I might be taking on a new profession that hopefully will not jeopardize my clergy housing credit.
Okay.
But a neighborhood detective who specializes in surveillance.
Like a Hardy Boy.
A little bit, yeah. So I've got my son John got some binoculars for Christmas.
They're so cute.
Grandparents, and I have been using them, hiding in my front office and getting license plates and descriptions of shady people who are hanging out across the street.
Mm.
So
I'm sure that's exactly what John's grandparents intended those binoculars to be used for.
Yeah, birds and criminals.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just we've had some crazy developments on our street, and I'm now like in conversations with this detective in Vancouver, and they used our house or our front yard for surveillance.
Oh my gosh.
Earlier on this week, for some shady dealings happening. Disclaimer, I do live in a nice, peaceful, tranquil neighborhood.
You really do.
It's very nice. But in the last like few months, some shady people moved into a house, stopped paying their rent, and have just like trashed the place. And anyways, it's not great. But I was late from my Zoom church on Sunday morning because I had my binoculars out and I was like watching all these crazy transactions going on and license plates and like emailing the police and like, this is perfect. We're coming over tonight. So, so, you know, like a few episodes ago when I was talking about like all the different times I've been apprehended
I was
by the police.
Thinking about that.
Yeah. Well, now I'm on the other side of the law.
At least this time they don't think you're the shady one when you're trying to tell them someone else is the shady one. This is you've lived next to suspected drug dealers, I feel like, too often in your lifetime.
Correct. And, you know, the jury's not completely out yet on whether or not they've turned their surveillance devices on our house. Who knows? No, they've not. I'm in the clear.
You're buddies with the detective now.
Yeah. So it's ridiculous. I'm just waiting any day now. The like SWAT team's going to come and they're going to bust the door down.
Oh my gosh.
So I just hope it's not when I'm picking my kids up from school. That would be a terrible.
Oh yeah. Maybe you can send them a little message and ask them to work around the kids' school drop-off pickup schedule. I feel like other parents on the street would appreciate that as well.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So, I mean, that's the exciting stuff happening here. What's exciting happening in Halifax?
I went snowboarding.
Hey.
Yay. It finally happened.
You are the second person I've talked to this week from Atlantic Canada who went snowboarding.
Was the other person Jamie MacArthur?
Jamie MacArthur.
Yeah. The second the restrictions were lifted and we were allowed to go from HRM, which is the Halifax Regional Municipality, out to the valley, which is where all of the mountains are, I suppose, somewhat ironically. I messaged Jamie and was like, Jamie, let's put together a ski trip like now, because we'd been talking about doing one with all the students in Nova Scotia, and then restrictions made it so that we couldn't. So we're planning one of those, and we both managed to get to the mountain. Jamie gets paid for it, which is nice. He also instructs.
Oh, nice.
I'm a real beginner, so I'm just working on not going down the whole mountain on a single edge. I just ride my toe edge the whole way down the mountain, which does not look cool at all. At this point, I should probably just take up skiing, but it's fine.
I'm just happy you're out and about getting some exercise, enjoying the snow. That's great.
Me too. I really thought I was going to go this whole season and not get to the ski hill once. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty happy.
Well, you know, it's just a crazy, crazy time with this COVID. And so you just got to appreciate the opportunities you get.
That's right.
Happen. So
opportunism. For
me, I'm walking around my neighborhood, getting to know the architecture of Vancouver Specials.
There you go.
And you're snowboarding in a region that has less restrictions. Yeah. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. You sound so happy for me.
Yeah, you gotta look for the bright spots.
That's right.
Like, the bright spot of our conversation today with our friends is that we actually had the conversation.
Yeah,
despite twice, all in fact. Of the technical difficulties we had.
Yep, conversation so nice. We had it twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this week's special edition, it's just one episode of the podcast this week, not two. So just a Monday release. We had so many issues with the technology that you're getting our best effort here.
truly getting our best effort. And it does fall just a little bit short of actually being good, but
that is on best. The technical end of things.
Yeah. The conversation is stellar.
Yeah. The conversation was great. So if you're willing, we encourage you to stick with it, because it's going to be really good.
And most of it is very listenable despite the noise. So basically, like, there's some noise interference, but there's only a couple of spots where it's like really, really tough to hear what else is going on. Most of it, I think, is like, it's quite okay. You sort of get used to it, you know?
Yep.
And the content is really worth sticking it out for. So
I think we should just jump over to it, because it's a longer episode, because it's just one, and we don't want to make this too long of a podcast. So should we go make some friends?
Let's go make some friends.
I'm Stacey Stewart. I work with the National Resource Center, and I am ecstatic to have St. Jana as a friend.
My name is Preston Steinke. I am in Toronto, at the University of Toronto. And when I heard that Sanjana was having some openings for new friends, I was super excited, and I just really hope she chooses me.
My name is Alisa, and I am from Circle Square Ranch, Big Clear Lake in Eastern Ontario. And I feel like my life has been upgraded by having this chance to be friends with Sanjana today.
Awesome. Nailed it again.
Yes, we are talking about the disruption of COVID. And hey, this podcast has been disrupted because we recorded half of the conversation and I made a mistake and lost it all.
Yeah.
So
we don't blame you, though.
No. But a big thanks to our guests who are sticking around for more conversation.
We still get paid for the first half, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But you know, in classic InterVarsity fashion, you have to raise what you get paid for this episode.
Just add it to your billable hours. Well, speaking of impacts of COVID to life and ministry, how have you guys been impacted both in life and in your ministries by the pandemic. You're all in Ontario, so I feel like you're having, but you're in different parts of it, so I feel like you're having slightly different experiences of it, but arguably one of the harder hit provinces in the country. So what's it been like for you?
From a personal perspective, it hasn't really been that disruptive in terms of the family dynamic. It's really just usually my son and I, and because we had some renovations being done to our home in August, we opted to stay with my mom during that time, and that seemed like the right thing to do to keep our bubble together. So that's what we've been doing. So in terms of being with family, that has not really changed very much for us. It's been a bit of running back and forth from this house to that house, but other than that, nothing has changed in that way. And because my son Jaden is going back to school in-person classes as of next week, though, we will be splitting that bubble again, just because we're not as comfortable this time around with the two new variants out there and what that could mean if, heaven forbid, he contracted something and then my mom had to be exposed to it, and the resilience that would be required for that. So we're changing our bubble, but up until now, it hasn't really impacted us that much.
Yeah, so for my family life, we welcomed our second child in December. And so it has just been an adjustment to being a family of four. We've enjoyed the challenges and have been outside as much as we can, despite the cold weather. On campus, things have been, I would say challenging, and everything is online. I find that students are tired of Zoom and tired of being online with classes and other responsibilities. But then at the same time, there is a desire to be connected to people and to have some sort of community. So they're trying to navigate that tension of those two things.
In the first go round, we had the whole like congratulations and the cute questions about your kids. So we don't get that in this recording, but congratulations.
Yeah. What do 2-year-olds love?
Thanks, guys.
I think this year has been like a mix of a bit disappointing and lots of refreshing too. Lots of dreaming about what could be, as we're like, I think, pressed for ideas and opportunities. And right now, like ministry that we would normally be doing, I'd normally be prepping for summer camp and recruiting and training staff and running retreats and outdoor ed, and all of that's like pretty much at a standstill, except for a few online efforts. There's some lead interns who live here, which is a big part of my life and is really good. But ministry definitely feels really slow and on a personal level. It's been fun often, but balancing the this is fun for me and this is not what we maybe wanted to happen overall. So
yeah, we talked previously about how COVID-19 pandemic has been a bit of a catalyst in our organization, both for exposing certain rigidities in our various ministries, as well as for forcing certain like reevaluations or like resets, maybe. I wonder if you guys could speak to some of the things that have changed in response to the pandemic and the new rhythms of it. Maybe like what of those things do you expect will persist beyond this season? And what of those things do you think are really just like useful tools for this particular situation, but may not necessarily serve us moving forward? If that feels like too many questions in one, feel free to just answer the first one and we'll circle back to the others.
Yeah, a couple things I think that might hold promise beyond now. We've really been brainstorming about how to move in the direction of family ministries. And well, camp is like kind of the best part of it is that kids get to come and be independent and have this sort of experience out of their normal context. That we might, the only way for us to do that this summer might be in with kids to come with their parents. And at first that seems a bit like an abrupt change and a bit disappointing. But as we are like exploring that, it seems like that might be the way that things are going in general in our society, as there's more helicopter parents and as families are probably valuing time with each other more. And so that could be something that we actually get to pioneer out of this, because sort of we're forced to right now. I was saying in our last thing that when kids come, it kind of feels like lighting kindling or something on fire. But when the parents, when families were to come, it sort of feels like, oh, we'd be trying to light wet logs in terms of getting them to spark their faith and their excitement. But if we could figure out how to do that, it would be really powerful. And like some of the online components of, I think Preston had more to speak to this, but like being able to have discussions with people that live all over the province who normally work here while we're all in different places, that seems like a unifying and good thing. And even just like having our year-round community, which has always been tight, but it feels like even we've had a chance to even grow closer together, and that actually allows us to have a lot to give to people who come for shorter periods of time or even to our guests.
So I think one of the things that I hope will persist is that we will be more involved in some and included, I guess I should say, in some of the meetings and events that happen when teams come together. What has been good about this season, which I think came about as a result of either actual barriers or perceived barriers to having certain, I'm going to speak for HR and for people and culture, but not just HR and people and culture, really. I think other areas within the National Resources Center would probably be able to say the same thing, and that is that there has been more inclusivity in things like various directors meetings or camp and campus meetings that wouldn't have happened before or didn't happen before. And I think that that might have been because of, you know, just how the groups are brought together, the geography of it, where things happen, or if they were brought together, if they came together in Toronto or Calgary or wherever it was before, you wouldn't necessarily be thinking about including National Resources folks to attend that because of those reasons, the cost, the geography, and all of that. But in this season, those barriers, the real ones and or the perceived ones have been, those have been removed with things like doing meetings online, virtually with Zoom and other platforms. So I think that has been very good for us as a department or an area, and also for the various teams. And so that's something that I think COVID was a catalyst for. And I would hope that those things will continue.
Yeah, I can relate to that on campus. Students have found that they enjoy connecting with other fellowships. So I work with the Korean Christian Fellowship at U of T, but there are six fellowships across Ontario, part of KCF. And we normally only have one retreat where we're all together per year, but we're finding that that fellowships have been collaborating more and more this last year. because they can afford to meet together online. They don't have to worry about traveling back and forth across the province. So I would imagine that something like that is gonna stay post-COVID, mm-hmm. As relationships are built and students just enjoy being with one another. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on a smaller scale, our fellowship, we've been trying to find ways to connect to each other online. And one fun thing that they came up with was to do, they call it a treat train. While we're on Zoom together, we order Uber Eats for one another, but it's a surprise. It's a surprise of what you're ordering for the person. So at some point, someone's going to come to your door, bring you food, and then you get to open it in front of everybody. And then we're all eating, together. So I think things like that could be fun to continue on. If we were to just continue meeting online, once COVID is over.
Do you like
that's a really good idea.
Do you like try to get each other things that you're gonna want, or is it like shock? Are you going for shock value? What do you get in your Uber Eats?
Usually, it's a more safe bet, you know, like treats or bubble tea or donuts or stuff like that. I have not yet received anything that's been questionable.
There's not a lot of questionable foods that like fit within a student budget. Also
true, and that you can get on Uber Eats.
Yeah, this episode brought to you by Uber Eats. that's a really good idea though. I've been pretty impressed by the creativity of, well, for me, students, because that's who I interact with the most, but I think just like generally the creativity of people in this season has been really impressive. And sometimes it pans out, sometimes it doesn't. Have there been things that you've tried or wanted to try that have been like a bust before they start, or like really didn't work out? Any horror stories?
For me, I don't think so. I can't think of any horror stories really.
You didn't try to get anything added to the HR list of forbidden activities, Stacey?
Not really, because my job is to make sure that those things don't happen. So I really wouldn't be doing my job very well if I allowed that.
Well, I'm pretty sure there's no go-kart axe throwing happening in this season. But there might be, because you could probably do that from a distance.
I was going to say, that sounds like a very good socially distanced activity.
Seems like a great idea, actually. I'll add that to the list.
Yeah. Simultaneously, right? You're go-karting and then you throw an axe at a target. That's how that works.
Yeah, the visual for that is making the hairs on the back of my neck stand.
Don't worry, it's beside like an unsupervised body of water. That's where the axe throwing's happening. So no lifeguards.
Well, it's actually the lake is frozen, so we'll be all right.
That's better. Because no one ever falls through a frozen lake.
Parent frozen lake.
To answer your question, I can't say anything has been like gone horribly wrong. And I don't know why that is. Maybe our expectations are lower. Or as I was talking about before, I know I've just received more grace from the Lord in this setting, where before I might have had certain anxieties about how many people are coming and like how good is the production that we're putting on, or are students like really learning or engaging, and all those things are like good and important. But I think with the pandemic, I've been able to just be more free to say, hey, this is how it is, and like I'll take what I can get with students coming and the things that my student leadership team has planned. They've like put in the work and we're going to study scripture and it's going to be okay. And I don't need to be so concerned about some of those other things that aren't really at the shouldn't take precedent in my heart or my mind about what is a successful ministry or what does it look like. So
yeah, you know, as you're saying that, it makes me think about how we have measured things in the past and the expectations we've had around what an effective or successful ministry is. Mm-hmm. And I think things would have gone horribly wrong if we had continued the same expectations mm-hmm. for ministry in the season. So then the gift then is that we actually get to examine, so what were our measurables? What were our expectations? Mm-hmm. Because I would want our staff across the country and all ministries to be receiving grace from Jesus every time, like every day in every way. And not like, well, we just have grace in like the seasons of disruption where mm-hmm. things are challenging. So, yeah, it makes me think about the really healthy conversations we can have about, okay, what should our expectations of ministry be in this new season, in COVID and post COVID?
Yeah, I think because the gift or one of the gifts has been grace, not just receiving, but extending grace. I think when you're in a position where you know that grace is required, or that you require grace, I think it does help you to change your posture with extending that grace to others, because it would seem just wrong to expect to get grace all the time yourself and not extend any grace to anybody else. So mm-hmm. I think that one of the gifts, as you, that was a good choice, a good word, I think, from this, as much as COVID has brought its own anxieties, but in this context that we're talking about it, I think it has forced us to be humble and rethink many things, of which grace is a huge one, how we receive it and how we give it. Mm-hmm. Because of the level of uncertainty, like there's so many things you cannot... The idea of control is, it doesn't have the same kind of meaning, because you cannot control the things that are happening around you to any satisfactory degree for people who are maybe control freaks. I mean, I don't think I'm a control freak, but I do like order, and I like to be able to manage or mitigate things that are going to go off the wheels. But I didn't even find it that, to be honest. I can't really say to anyone that I felt super anxious about, you know, all the craziness that was happening, because I guess how I dealt with that was I really went into, okay, well, let's examine the facts mode. Go to the horse's mouth for the things that you need. Where are the areas that we should be paying attention? And I think I probably spent more time trying to weed out the things that were not going to be helpful and just zero in on the things that were meaningful for the moment. So that eliminates having, like, you can't spend too much time trying to control anything when you're focusing on trying to zone in on what's important so you manage what's in front of you right now. So I think that's probably why we didn't have that feeling of things going horribly wrong, because if anything went horribly wrong, it was going horribly wrong for everybody as we're kind of dealing with the same thing.
Yeah. It's just like God to like take a global catastrophe and turn it into like a season of revelation of his grace for his people. Like, mm-hmm. not that that's the only thing that everyone's been experiencing, but even just to be able to like explore like what a work-life balance, explore like slowing down and be able to be present with the people around you and stuff, that seems mm-hmm. refreshing. Like there's just a lot of permission to try that kind of thing right now.
Yeah, one of the conversations that my friends and I have been having over the course of this pandemic season is like, how broadly is work culture going to be changed by this? Because there were so many workplaces where before working from home was just not an option. Flexible hours were just not an option. And all of those paradigms of like, what is possible, what is not possible, like when should people be staying, how sick does someone need to be in order for them to legitimately stay home, stuff like that, seem to have been totally like flipped around. And so many more things are possible or have been proven to be possible, if not ideal, right? So like, is the new norm going to be that when you're sick, you're told to stay home, but you're also told to work from home because now your bosses know that that's possible? Or is the norm going to be that you have the option of working from home, say, beyond your parental leave because your bosses know that that is possible? So you don't have to like rush back to work and worry about finding childcare and stuff like that. Or, you know, is it possible that you can have some days in the office and some days not in the office with your work, depending, of course, on like what it is that you do. But just how much of like the innovation that we've been forced into will potentially like reshape how we move forward in general. And one of the areas that I'm really intrigued with that, aside from like just where you work and days off and stuff like that, is with technology. So using Zoom, using Instagram, using TikTok, using all of these platforms that, man, I had never touched before. Elisa and I had a conversation earlier this week about Instagram because I'm trying some stuff on the national Instagram page and she runs that thing and she does a great job with it. And I have no idea what I'm doing. So she can attest to the fact that I don't know what I'm doing. But we're sort of having to figure out what to do and how to use these platforms effectively. And so I actually do have a bit of a, not a horror story, but like a flub, a social media oopsie. Our students were like, so Nova Scotia has been pretty open, so we've been able to meet in person, but when restrictions tightened a bit and we had to go online, our students decided to take the small group online, but not just by sticking it on Zoom, because, you know, we talked about just how tired everyone is of connecting online, but they're like hungry for connection as well. So they really didn't want to just turn it into a Zoom meeting. So we like reconfigured the whole small group to use an Instagram live stream. And to use our stories on Instagram for the week leading up to it so that it's like a whole series. And every day there's a little bit of information put out that like builds up to this live conversation that we have on Fridays. And in one of the weeks, we talked about cancel culture and we were just examining like what are the different pieces around cancel culture and how does it relate to justice and our perceptions in society of justice. And one of our students was like, oh man, we got to get some content up today. So he just threw some content up. And the way that it was like structured was really unfortunate. It just made it look like we were saying that cancel culture was the equivalent of some of these like horrible historical atrocities, like witch hunts and lynchings and stuff. Like it was really not great. And like one of our followers and former like members of the fellowship got in touch with us and was like, hey, me and my friend saw this, and their friend happens to be not a Christian but was connected to our group, and like we really didn't think it was cool, and here's our problems with it. Seems really problematic. I think you need to address it, take it down, blah, blah, blah. And at first everyone was like freaking out. And one of my leaders was like, I've never been problematic before. I don't know how to deal with this. And it ended up being fine, right? I mean, realistically, we've got a couple hundred followers. So like no more than 50 people saw that to begin with. We're not that influential. We'd like to be, but we're not yet. But it was also a really good opportunity to figure out what it looks like to take responsibility for your words and your actions in a public sphere like that. So how do we address what's happened without just like deleting the post and sweeping it under the rug? Yeah, like how do we take responsibility for it? But then also to think about like what are different platforms for and how should they be used, and what kind of intentionality do you need as you're using them? So we talked about like when we want to discuss some of the complexities of this issue, maybe stories is not the place to talk about it. So, you know, we want to bring up the discussion around like how does the like mob mentality coincide with like the court of public opinion when you have complex power structures involved in it. That's a great conversation, but not for a single story on Instagram. That's not where you bring that topic up. So I just feel like there's some significant learning curves in this season, but also some really interesting ones. And I wonder if you guys have experienced some like similarly interesting learning curves that you think, oh, actually, as we think about the longevity of our ministry and some of the more persistent changes, these are things that we're learning now that even if it was like painful in the moment or a bit of a mistake or whatever, is actually really helpful.
I think it's interesting that you're talking about kind of taking time to be intentional about those different platforms of influence, and it's sort of like kind of going to the next level or in like, or moving into the future, and this is the time to do that. Right. And I wonder if that's something that like that this isn't a time to sort of have our ears to what God is doing really intently, because like there's going to be a post-COVID culture. And if there's going to be a post-COVID student culture, there's going to be a post-COVID family, camper family culture, and church culture. And I don't think that I really know what those things are going to be or what that's going to necessarily look like. But maybe like in this time when there is some margin to be like praying and being intentional about things, we're sort of in a unique position to figure out how to respond to those questions with the truth of the gospel and how to be a pioneer youth ministry, young adult ministry in like this totally unknown space.
Yeah, I think there's a unique space that we can invite the Holy Spirit into as a movement to actually discover what kind of life we are invited to live in this Canadian context that is faithful to the season, the context, what God's already doing. And I say that because I have a friend who is involved with the Guatemalan church, and when we talk about the differences between the Guatemalan church and the Canadian church, he says, oh yeah, you guys are often talking about discovering Jesus through rest and like healthy work-life balances, and that's probably because there's such a driven kind of culture around North American way of living that you need that correction. But in my context, he's saying in Guatemala, we're such a laid back culture that actually the faithful expression of the church down there is we hustle for Jesus, and we are encouraged to hustle for Jesus. And so I like that image, cause it's different in that context, but like it is the Holy Spirit's actually directing, people and communities to act and behave and live in specific ways that are a part of their witness in the context they're in. So
I find that extremely interesting, because what it highlights, at least as I think about it, is the Holy Spirit is actually trying to get us to be in a similar place, and that could look different, even from one province to another. If you want to go with that, that could look different. This week, one of the devotionals that I'm doing is called, I think it's called Holy Hustle or something like that. And it actually was talking about that very thing, about what that looks like for each of us individually. Because for me, it might be to, you know, correct my way of thinking about having to handle a whole bunch of things all at once and put more balance in my entire life, not just my work life, but what that means for home, what that means for work, what that means for other activities. But to live more holistically, different things might have to change for me than it might have to change for you. But at the end of the day, it's to bring us all to where Jesus wants us to be, which is fascinating to me, and perhaps not something that you would normally sit down and think about, because we're all so caught up in our own, what's happening right around us, that we might not be thinking very much about, okay, that's my reality, but for someone else, that's not their reality. And so if we should learn anything, it would be to do that. Not think that we always have the answers, number one, and really spend time intentionally listening to what people are dealing with, so that we can invite the Holy Spirit to help us figure out our role in helping them, and expect them to learn something from that, not just be the person that's the part of the correction or part of the corrective measure, but actually that it is life-giving for both people involved, and that the Holy Spirit's role is for us to use the gifts that we have to help that person, and for that person, or for us to try to help that person to see how what we're bringing can help them, and then learn from them as well, so we can go on to help another set of people. So that's fascinating.
That's good, Stacey. This might be going back a bit, but I don't think I shared anything that has gone wrong, and that feels like the right thing to do. So the story that came to mind, so we basically, in the spring when we realized we couldn't rent anything, not panicked, but we basically just put everything on Airbnb, like all different parts of our facility, including like somebody's house that they lived in. Like, we just put everything on Airbnb. And we got so many interesting guests. Some of them were lovely, like personal retreats, working from home, but looking for a change of pace. Great, great. That was all fine. And like, there's supposed to be no alcohol, so that was supposed to like keep the crazy people out. But we got to a couple of, there was a few times when we were like, why are we doing this? Like one of the kind of the higher value locations was a cottage by the lake that normally some staff live in. And like Anne, and who's our director, and I one day had like to do a quick turnover, and we thought that they had been like, there was a group of young people. We thought they'd kind of cleaned up, even though we saw that they had been pretty loud. But what they like they kind of cleaned the surface, and then we started like moving things, and like under the couch, there was just like 4 feet of like encrusted puke, and we're just like scraping it off. And we had like an hour before the next people came. And so people just made a lot of mess. And like, there was a witchcraft incident where we had some interesting folks doing some interesting stuff on our property, ended in up in like a midnight prayer meeting. And yeah, so I think we learned a little bit irrelevant to the future, but we just like do learn that we do need to be careful who we invite here.
Was that for risk management?
Live and learn.
So yeah, one of the things we are wanting to talk about is what we think this ministry will look like from coast to coast in a pre-COVID-19 context. And there's ways we can look at what's currently happening and ask God, like, what is the thing that you have for us in the future? So on the campus side, We have done MART camps for over a decade. And in this past year, when we did MART in the West Coast, the conversation we had around the destruction of the temple was really fascinating, because there's this way in which Jesus talks about it as these birth pangs. It's kind of painful and scary, but there's something new that's going to be born out of that. And so in a campus context, we're kind of seeing that, like, we're kind of putting our MART camps to rest. And it's been kind of rocky getting to that place in a COVID context, but there's something really new that's going to come for our entire ministry as we explore new scriptures and new ways of engaging students. So I wonder, for us, what are some of the things that we think we might be learning in this disruption of COVID that we think is going to shape what future ministry looks like across the country?
I feel like part of what's happening is, or has happened even, is that we've had to step up our game. Yeah. We've had to step up in so many ways that we talked about some of the ways already, rethinking how we do things, engaging students in a different way, restructuring some of our areas. I think that out of that is going to come some new, it's going to cause people to stretch, right? Because you're not doing things the same old way anymore. Even if you wanted to, you can't. So it's going to cause people to stretch. And stretching is not a bad thing. I think stretching is a good thing. But every time it happens, it also uncovers some vulnerabilities, or it brings things to surface that could have stayed hidden below the surface, and in many ways have stayed hidden below the surface for a long time. And so I think that some of that is already organically happening, where things are coming to surface that we can no longer ignore and we don't want to ignore. And that's going to mean new strengths. In some cases, it's going to mean new skill sets. It's going to mean taking risk, maybe in areas that we didn't want to take risk before or felt that we couldn't take risk. And already we're starting to see some of those things come out in, you know, I think everybody's seeing the surveys now and or had an opportunity to contribute. And I think that that is a good thing, in that people are actually bringing some of those things to surface and doing it from a place where I hope is that they feel safe. It's safe to do that. So in response to that, I think the ministry has to look different. It just does. It has. It will organically happen. Some things might need to be pushed forward a little sooner than others, just as we continue to figure out what our priorities are going to be. I think that that is going to drive what gets done when. But I think we need to be careful in the sense that as expectations rise, we need to be able to manage those expectations, because we have a lot of things happening and a lot of things that need to happen, but we are not going to be able to do them all at the same time. So that could very well mean that it might feel like some disappointment for some, because if what you think is of utmost importance doesn't get handled, you know, right at the forefront, I'm hopeful that we'll be communicating, or we'll continue to communicate in the new way that we've been doing that, being more open, being more transparent, communicating or over-communicating, so that we can help manage some of those expectations and encourage people to continue doing what they're doing in the sense of contributing and being open and honest with the way they're feeling and how things are going. So, I mean, hopefully that has answered your question, but as I think about it long-term, and I also think one of the things that for me, even as a director, then have to learn how to do, continue to learn how to do, is to be more strategic in the way things are approached. And that's kind of hard to do sometimes in this ministry, because we're always straddling the strategic with the tactical. And we got a lot of tactical going on all the time. And that's not usually the way it plays out, or hasn't been usually the way it plays out in other arenas. So one of the things that I think we need to be mindful about is that too, how we thinking forward all the time and giving space for that to happen while we're able to keep the tactical things going. That, for me, perhaps, I don't know if anyone else will identify with that, but that for me has been a challenging thing to do, particularly because as we scale down, just because we scale down in numbers doesn't mean that things that need to happen have gone away. In some cases, they have increased. So,
yeah, adding on to those thoughts, I think on a more individual scale, the pandemic might help people hone in on their like own passions or skills or things that they're ways of leading, at least in a campus context. I find that being online has drawn the conclusion that I really enjoy like the one-on-one encounters with students, and that's a part of my ministry that I just find so much joy in. I find it very rewarding. I haven't been able to do it in the same degree online. I just don't have that connection. So I feel like that's gonna, like learning that, I think, is gonna change the way I spend my time and do ministry once we're able to be back in person. And I wonder if that's gonna be true for other staff and other students. Like they find, like they learn something about themselves during this time that they're gonna lean into once we're back to be in person. So that isn't really a grand changing structure or cultural shift from the organizational standpoint, but I think it's more like individually I can see that happening.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And so like love what Dave said about the birth pangs. I feel like as much as there is so much tragedy happening in different spheres right now, this is ought to be, like both of you have said, like this is ought to be something that God is also in and going to use. And a couple thoughts are that we're becoming more resilient. And I think I said that the first time around, but even just like at camp in our business, we are looking for different ways to get income. And so we can be kind of sustained no matter what comes, like starting a tent and trailer space and running different kinds of programs, looking at different options. And I imagine that's true on different fronts. Like what kinds of different tools do we have in our diversifying the tools in our tool belt to do what we do, and like at the same time trying to stay focused on stay focused on our mission and not lose like sight of our goal, but expanding to be able to do it. And another thought is that as people have gone through this ordeal, I think a lot of people's foundations of what they think the world is like and their kind of predictable life course has been really shaken. And so I hope that as we go forward, we'll have something to speak into that as people that know the unshakable God, that we can say, hey, even to a kid, like, hey, we actually know of something that's for sure. And and a God that's for sure. And he's going to be there no matter what. And to be able to sort of introduce that as a primary way that we can communicate who God is and that people might be open to that were before, that would be something that I could see good coming out of all this.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Sunshine Needs a Friend. Thank you to Elisa, Preston, and Stacy for sharing their wisdom about ministry during and after a COVID era.
We're going to be making some fun podcast artwork to go along with this podcast series. And we'd like to capture all the faces of people who have become Sanjana's friends throughout this whole process. And you can be involved in that too. So if you want to send us your picture, we will add it to the special edition artwork that's getting made. And you can send that to dstone@ivcf.ca by the end of March. And as well, please send an audio clip of your name being pronounced correctly if you'd also like to be part of a special podcast coming up. 20 seconds, same address.
And don't forget to tune in to our final episode. Episode 6 will be our final one, and we're going to talk to Nigel Pollock. So be here for that. Thanks for listening, everyone. Do, 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 do.